You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Piper Corp, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program of the Ecological Society of America, where I interview scientists who are involved in ecological policy issues. Today I am interviewing Dr. Jason Neff, an ESA Rapid Response Team member and an assistant professor of geological sciences and environmental studies at the University of Colorado Boulder. Dr. Neff, you're visiting Washington, D.C. this week to discuss a climate change project of yours with contacts in the Department of Interior. The project deals with incorporating climate impacts analysis into public lands planning. Can you describe it in more detail?
So what we're doing with the Department of Interior right now is working with a public land center in southern Colorado to begin the process of trying to understand how one would actually incorporate climate change impacts into the public lands planning process. That is a major task. It's one that public land agencies like the Forest Service or the Park Service have talked about and they've started approaching, but it's a very difficult task. It involves first understanding what the scope of change will be and then really understanding how that climate change might impact the resources that that particular agency is managing. I'm working mostly with the Bureau of Land Management, which has a diverse set of management goals, and in that case it's really an open question as to how best to approach the climate change problem. So this is really a chance to get started doing that.
So how does communicating the importance of research change when you talk with the Interior Department, which has regulatory responsibilities, compared to, for example, the National Science Foundation, which awards most of its federal funds directly to academic research institutions?
So NSF focuses its efforts really on scientific research, and while there may be societal implications of that research, the primary goal of all those efforts really is the development of that research expertise. When you're working with management agencies, research is one of multiple competing issues that the manager has to wrestle with. So we could find, for example, that there was going to be dramatic warming in southern Colorado that would result in massive forest dieback, but that finding alone doesn't say anything really about what sort of policy should be developed. The types of policies that come out of an agency depend on the stakeholder interests. It could be that people really don't like those forests in southern Colorado. You know, that's silly, but in the end, it's ultimately a balance between the economics, the societal impacts, and the ecological impacts that a manager has to wrestle with. And in that sense, I think managers have a much more difficult job than scientists because we're able to think in a fairly abstract way about some of these impacts.
You're involved with the San Juan Collaboratory, which brings several universities together to develop relationships with public and private institutions that support sustainable environmental and economic development in rural areas in Colorado. Can you describe some of the activities that SJC is involved in?
Yeah, so about a year and a half ago, we started something called the San Juan Collaboratory, and it's a little hard to explain exactly what this is because it's sort of a loose affiliation between the University of Colorado, Fort Lewis College, which is in southern Colorado, the San Juan Public Land Center, which is a joint BLM and U.S. Forest Service land management unit, and the Mountain Studies Institute, which is a nonprofit. The idea is that we're limited in our ability to move either research or educational opportunity out to parts of the country that are more removed from the major research universities. So in Colorado, on the Front Range, we have tremendous academic and government resources. NOAA, NCAR, USGS, University of Colorado, Colorado State University, Colorado School of Mines, it's all concentrated in a 50 or 100-mile corridor. And that expertise and those capabilities don't often get moved out to other parts of the state. And similarly, the sort of educational opportunity that's provided by those institutions isn't always obvious in other parts of the state. On the western slope of Colorado, you hear that you might as well go to Harvard compared to the University of Colorado. There's as much likelihood of going from a small school on the western slope to Harvard as there is going to CU Boulder. Without some sort of attempt to bridge those gaps between the more rural and the more urban areas, and particularly in the western U.S., we're not going to be able to really facilitate development of those regions or just increase opportunity in those areas.
So, now that the economy and the environment are among the nation's central concerns, what kind of role do you see similar initiatives, ones that interweave socioeconomic and environmental issues, playing in the future?
We're doing a number of different things as part of the climate change project I described as something that emerged out of that. And in a nice way, when you set up these sort of interactions or affiliations, you're able to have conversations that lead to projects. So our climate change project was something that actually emerged out of the Public Land Center. It's something that the center staff is interested in. I mean, I might have sat in Boulder in my office and said, oh, wouldn't this be interesting? But it's much better actually when that whole problem and question and focus comes from the people who would actually use the information. So that's one example. Another example is in Colorado, like other Western states, we're having even with the economic downturn, a tremendous boom in resource extraction, particularly gas, but also oil. And those activities are having some pretty significant impacts on the environment. And understanding sort of the balance between the economy, the environment, and those activities is becoming an important thing. This basic question of how the economy and the environment are interrelated, the nature of that question is changing through time. You know, in a lot of parts of the rural West, initially you look at sort of resource extraction, you look at things like natural gas development, and that's very appealing because a lot of these places are economically depressed. There isn't a lot of opportunity. But that sort of resource extraction follows a pattern that we've seen very often in the West of boom and bust cycles. And you know, some of these natural gas activities may bring economic development to a region. It also brings with it other pressures, meth use, pressures on social structures and schools. And there's no guarantee that when that economic activity is done, that the benefits are going to outweigh the costs. And we haven't done a very good job of evaluating or balancing those issues. So I think having a more comprehensive way of assessing the long-term economic benefits of activities and weighing those against some of the long-term environmental impacts, which also have economic considerations, that's becoming an increasingly important area. And it's also, I think, a place where we're likely to cross some of the partisan lines, because in a lot of parts of the West, it's obvious what the environmental impacts are. And in those places, I think there are fertile areas for trying to find agreement on ways to balance economic development and environmental protection.
Many universities are working to develop interdisciplinary programs, which seem particularly well-suited for initiatives like environmental sustainability, which involve an enormous variety of inputs and stakeholders. Based on your experience with interdisciplinary work, what are some of the pros and cons of these programs?
At the University of Colorado, I have an unusual faculty position because half of me is in geology and half of me is in environmental studies program. And the sciences overall, I think, in the past two decades have become increasingly interdisciplinary. There's not that many interesting scientific questions that don't require you to move outside your field. It's not completely true, but it's largely true. So I think we've seen tremendous growth and acceptance of those sorts of activities in the sciences. And I think probably most people who are beginning to collaborate or develop new research areas in environmental science are going to inherently be interdisciplinary. The other half of my interactions in environmental studies are interdisciplinary in a different way, and that's really working with people, you know, who are policy scientists or sociologists. There are much bigger challenges, I think, to working across those types of lines. There are language differences, there are research differences. When we hired a philosopher in our program, all of us had to adjust to the way that philosophers give their talks because it's very different than the way that scientists give talks. So those are a challenge. It's also really rewarding because I think it broadens the way that you approach problems and think about problems. I think these issues of interdisciplinarity and interdisciplinary training function at different levels through education. So at the undergraduate level, based on my experience, I think there are legitimate concerns about the discussion of breadth versus depth. You know, our students who move through interdisciplinary programs getting the sufficient level of training in whatever their core field is to move on to, say, graduate work. And at the same time, in the more disciplinary tracks, our students moving through those getting exposure to enough areas. So I think we're really wrestling with that at the undergraduate level.
You're a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, where you teach a class on climate science with Michelle Ellsworth, a dance professor. What was the inspiration for the class?
So over the last few years, sort of on the side of everything else, one of the really interesting discussions that we've had in Boulder is whether there's a way to make art and science interact to the benefit of both. The idea behind these discussions and ultimately this class that I've taught with Michelle Ellsworth, who's a performance artist and dance professor at CU Boulder, is, you know, I think in society in general and even amongst us who are, you know, in these disciplines, we tend to look at art and science as very different things. Our stereotypes of artists are that you go out and you drink a cup of coffee and you wrestle with your demons for a while and then suddenly you paint a beautiful painting on the wall that is moving to everyone who sees it. And scientists are you know, uptight and wear their lab coats and sit in the lab sketching out the most excruciatingly boring details of the experiments that they're going to carry out, for which they already know the outcomes long in advance of doing the actual study. You go through high school art class or high school science class, and there's a reason why we have those sorts of perceptions in a lot of cases. And in fact, most artists that I've interacted with go through this incredible sort of research process prior to even embarking. That's very similar to what we do in science, is familiarizing yourself with ideas, building those ideas up into a bigger hypothesis in a sense, and then going through the actual work of that expression requires all these steps, and it is not nearly as spontaneous as it appears when you see it on the wall or in front of you on a stage. So in that sense, the arts are quite similar to science, and there's an interaction between sort of the discipline of creation and the creative process itself. And on the sciences, you look at how Nobel Prizes are often won, and it's not so infrequent that the prize actually is the result of a mistake that somebody observed and was able to sort of run with that observation. And so there's an aspect of creativity, I think, and serendipity that people don't appreciate in science. And a lot of times I think scientists actually do all sorts of things to facilitate their creative skills that are not so dissimilar to what artists do. So that was kind of the motivation for the course. It's been an interesting process. You know, one case we did the carbon cycle and then had the students dance out aspects of that cycle. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that anyone who has tried to dance the process of albedo is going to forget what that is. I think it also, in terms of attracting people to the sciences, you know, removing this sort of perception that science is boring, that it's rote, and that you're alone sitting in a lab all the time. Understanding that science is very different than that, is much more interactive and collaborative and creative, is probably a really important step toward bringing people into the field.
That was Jason Neff from the University of Colorado Boulder. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time on The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.